This is Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi, sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Ratchford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and UConn Health Orthopedic and Sports Medicine. Healthy Rounds provides general information regarding medical conditions and diseases. The information is not intended to create a doctor-patient relationship. You are encouraged to consult your own medical provider for advice that applies to your own medical care. And now, Dr. Anthony Alessi on WTIC, News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.
Welcome to Healthy Rounds, the show that provides you with up-to-date medical information and answers all of your health questions. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and it's great to be back with you for a live program this Saturday morning. We have had a few weeks of taped interviews due to football, and unfortunately, the season is over for UConn, there's always next season, and it was great to see good competition. And with that, we prepare for basketball season, but that does not conflict with this program typically. So we have live programs the next several weeks, and I'm looking forward to all of those. Today, I'm going to have a guest on live. Dr. Jennifer Pinoyer will be my guest. She is the founder of Pinoyer Dermatology, and it is a private dermatology practice. She has been a guest on our show. Boy, it's been quite a few years, so I'm glad we can get her back on. Because, you know, we're seeing a lot of commercials on TV where they're talking about medications for psoriasis and other skin conditions. And I think it's worth really taking a look at really what are these medications? What are these breakthroughs? So that, and also the field of cosmetic dermatology. So many new skincare products, facials that people are using to restore the health of their skin. So we're going to chat with Dr. Pinoyer starting at 11:20. As always, I'll be taking your questions at info@alessimd.com. And that's very helpful because we've had questions in the past that pertain to skin and skin conditions. So I'm looking forward to getting some of those answered from Dr. Pinoyer. This day in medicine, December 2nd, 1885, is when Dr. George Minot, M-I-N-O-T, he actually was awarded the Nobel Prize. And on this day, he was the American hematologist awarded the Nobel Prize for his work using liver to treat patients with pernicious anemia. So I find this fascinating because it was something we kind of grew up with. Many of you who are my age will certainly recommend people with anemia ate liver. But for pernicious anemia, and for those of you unfamiliar with it, pernicious anemia is an autoimmune condition. And basically, you're blocking the absorption of vitamin B12. So it's a vitamin B12 deficiency that leads to anemia. The absorption of vitamin B12 is interesting because it happens in the stomach, and it is thanks to something called an intrinsic factor. This intrinsic factor binds to the B12 and allows the stomach to absorb it. If you don't have the intrinsic factor, then you're unable to absorb it. With that, what happens is it leads to the deficiency in B12. So with that, what does it have? Well, first of all, it typically happens in people age 60 to 80. So as we get older, we can develop this condition. Your vitamin B12 level drops. And it's important for neurologic help. So I often order this test because one of the things you will see is peripheral nerve disorder, where you can't feel your hands and feet very well, but it also leads to degeneration of the spinal cord, a portion of the spinal cord with sensation. So patients will present with symptoms of a loss of balance, frequent falls, and numbness. But it also leads to confusion, short-term memory loss, depression, You could even see visual changes. Now, one of the ways we see a B12 deficiency now is when people have gastric surgery. So a lot of people are having gastric bypass surgery that really looks at trying to lose weight, right? So they'll cut out part of the stomach or bypass the stomach. So it's important for these folks to get a supplement of vitamin B12. And typically it's by injection, a monthly injection, but at times you can take it orally. So again, B12 is so vital. And we remember Dr. Minot, who was born on December 2nd, 1885. An update for folks on COVID. So we're seeing quite a bit of COVID, not a lot of hospitalizations overall. Our Connecticut hospitalizations from COVID are down by 16% in the past 2 weeks. And it's really been the greatest cause of hospitalizations, though, nationally from an infection. We're seeing about 1,000 deaths per week nationally. But as you'll remember, this is relatively minor compared to the 40,000 deaths per week we were seeing in the past. So the numbers are down in terms of the seriousness of COVID, but by the same token, we're still seeing it. And a lot of this has to do with people getting vaccinated. You're going to see it go down. Flu is up primarily in the South and Southwest. And what does that mean to us? And it means that typically there's kind of a wave where we start seeing things like the flu and RSV in the South and Southwest. Respiratory syncytial virus, which a lot of people are hearing about in infants and the way it affects older folks with a severe type of pneumonia, is high in Georgia and Texas right now. So the numbers are going to edge upward, especially as we get together around the holidays. The RSV vaccine, I had read an article that it was in short supply, but when I went online and went to CVS and Walgreens, it is readily available. In fact, I'm scheduled to get my vaccination tomorrow for the respiratory syncytial virus. It is indicated for adults over the age of 65, and naturally it is available for children. One of the other things I wanted, it's kind of a feel-good article I read, was about a woman named Casey McIntyre. She was a 38-year-old who passed away from cancer. And what was interesting about this story was she wanted to erase medical debt for many people. So she lived in New York City. She had adequate insurance and got the best of care at Memorial Sloan Kettering. But when she saw the bills coming in, and I'm sure other people have seen this, when you see the bills and the charges, right, they're astronomical. And she wondered about people who didn't have insurance. So right now there are 11 million Americans who have medical debt of over $2,000. So what she did was, after her passing, her husband published a message on X. And in the message, she said, if you're reading this message, I've passed on. And I love all of you, to her family. But she set a goal of $20,000 to raise to help erase the debt of other people posthumously. Their response was incredible. They raised $140,000. What's interesting about that, with $140,000, that was enough to purchase $14 million in debt. So I know what you're asking right now is, okay, how does $140,000 become $14 million? And that's because much of this debt is negotiable. So there are organizations out there who contact, whether they be the hospitals, the insurers, and whoever they are, who hold the debt, and are able to negotiate that down. So it was just, it's interesting from several standpoints. One is, why is there so much medical debt in the United States of America? And that's because we don't have universal care. And we need to get to that point. And again, why is it so expensive and you can negotiate it down? Okay. And that's another issue that needs to be looked at. But with a universal system, at least people will have access to care. They can intervene earlier in before a medical crisis erupts. So with that, I applaud someone, and I think that's just a feel-good story for this holiday season. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to be back with my guest, Dr. Jennifer Pennoyer. We're going to be talking about dermatology today, and I could see questions coming in already. So I'm looking forward to this discussion as we talk about dermatology, common skin conditions, and really the cosmetic part of dermatology. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi. And it's great to have as my guest today, Dr. Jennifer Pennoyer. Dr. Pennoyer is a medical doctor, a dermatologist with a practice here in Bloomfield, Connecticut. Well, welcome back to the show, Jen. In more ways than one. It's been a few years since we've had you on, and I've had a lot of questions coming up about dermatology, but can you describe for the listeners what is the field of dermatology now? Because it's clearly an evolving field.
There's a lot of exciting changes going on in dermatology. So, you know, dermatology is the study of skin, and that's our largest organ. So there's the medical side, which is rashes and those genetically inherited skin diseases. And then we have just an abundance of skin cancer these days. And it also crosses over into the, you know, surgical realm with cutting out all those skin cancers, but also doing the cosmetic end, which is lasers. There's some fillers. You know, we do toxins, and there's a whole, you know, new realm of regenerative medicine. So there's a lot going on.
So can you talk a little bit about how a dermatologist is trained? And I guess it leads me right into the next question. Is there a shortage of dermatologists? Because, are there the programs restrictive? Are there fewer programs available? Because we see a lot more advanced practice providers in dermatology, whether it be APRNs or PAs. So can you talk a little bit about the training for a medical doctor in dermatology and talk a little bit about a shortage, if there is one?
Oh, there's an absolute shortage there. After medical school, to do dermatology, you need to do 1 year of internal medicine internship and then 3 years of dermatology. There's very few spots in the country for dermatology. And part of the reason is it's expensive to train doctors. And nowadays, hospitals don't have the finances to cover that necessarily. And they are supported by the federal government in that. So I know, you know, within the last 20 years, UConn got a dermatology residency, and they've, you know, it's hard to work to get a few more added spots added every year, but there's still a definite shortage, and that's where the PAs and APRNs come in, and they can help us see patients and then have us as the backup.
What attracted you to dermatology?
Oh, it's fun. You know, nobody in my family was surprised that I wanted to do dermatology because I liked all the gross things, you know. it's fun to look at, you know, and it's just so interesting. And it's such a diverse field. I can treat newborn babies up to a 100-year-old. I have a 103-year-old. It's a long lasting relationship. I have had patients with me for over 20 years. And it's just a really rewarding specialty. And I like to do a lot of things. And I like to do procedures. So I'm doing my own surgeries for skin cancer and stuff. So it gives me a lot of variability in my day, and that's what makes it fun.
Now, I know personally, you know, how efficient and how large your office is. In a typical day, are you solely in the office, or do you go to a surgery center or a hospital to work?
I'm only in my office, and really, you know, majority of my day is skin cancer checks, but that also encompasses, you know, eczema, psoriasis, all those things. Love my acne teenagers, and you know, acne is all ages, really. But then we get the urgent rashes, which are always very interesting. I do about 2 surgeries a day. I do have, you know, everybody's awake for when I'm doing these things, so I don't have to go to a surgery center. But, you know, I can do those in the office. So I'm just in the office.
What's the most common condition you see? You mentioned a few of them, but what are the most common things you see?
Well, psoriasis is 2% of the population. That's the most common skin disorder in the United States today. And multiple genes have to come together to give you that tendency. That and eczema really are the most common. We are getting smarter and smarter with regard to how we've learned what stimulates those rashes and skin disorders to come out. And so our treatments are so much better than when I first started out. It's really been incredible evolution on that. I used to have to worry about somebody's liver and kidneys and all this other interactions with other medications. Nowadays, we're stopping that inflammatory mediator that is the one that's signaling the skin to overproduce and make this rash. They're just so targeted and smart. It's really exciting. You know, those are more for the full body and people with a lot more skin involvement. We do have some topicals that are new on the market, too. You know, we've always had steroid creams. We always worry about thinning the skin. Now I don't have as many worries about that. I've got other things to choose from that are totally safe and work just as well.
How about the systemic medications? So we're seeing a lot of these ads on TV for immunotherapies. Has that become a big part of your practice for psoriasis?
It has been. You know, really over the last 15 years, it's exploded. And they are so amazing. You know, you think of the emotional ramifications of having a rash covering your whole body. And some of these start in childhood, and that's really hard. So to be able to give them a shot once every 90 days and have them clear, it's incredible. We do, you know, so those are the biologics that people kind of hear about, Humira, Stelara, Skyrizi, Ilumya, they're all Tremfya. We have a lot to choose from. And a lot of people are on them for other things, you know, the rheumatologic issues and some of the Crohn's, ulcerative colitis people are on them. So they really cast a wide net as far as who they help. And they're very targeted and specific. We also have a new class called JAK inhibitors, which are pills. And that those are useful for psoriasis and eczema. They have a little bit more side effects, a little bit more risks with those. But again, you know, we have just more options because everybody brings their own set of issues to the table. And so I have more things to choose from. It's great.
That's great. We're chatting today with Dr. Jennifer Pinoyer. We're talking about dermatology. We're going to take a break. Just so I don't forget, if you wish to reach Dr. Pinoyer's office, the phone number is 860-243-3020. Her office is right on Jolly Drive here in Bloomfield, Connecticut. If you have questions for Dr. Pinoyer, you can reach me at info@alessimd.com. We'll take a short break and then we're going to be back. You're listening to Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're back on Healthy Rounds. I'm your host, Dr. Anthony Alessi, and today pleased to have as my guest Dr. Jennifer Pinoyer, and we're talking about dermatology. Jen, questions have come in periodically, and I just got another one now. So I hope I could run a few by you here.
Sounds good.
All right. First one was, well, you said your family knew you were going into dermatology because you like being around things that are gross. Here's one, scabies. Okay. So can you talk a little bit about scabies? Is this something that, how do you get it? How do you get rid of it? I mean, I saw a fair amount of it when I was in Haiti, but what do you do with it?
Oh, it's no fun. That's one of the worst things you can probably get infected with. They are a mite that can burrow and live under your skin. And so it can be 10 out of 10 itch, really drive you crazy. And where we see it largely is in schools, hospitals, nursing homes, any place where there's a lot of people in close proximity. Interestingly, the incubation period can be up to 2 weeks from your exposure to really showing the symptoms of the burrows and the itchy bumps. And so you got to, it's not an easy treatment. Probably, you know, the most common way we do it is with a cream, and we have you put the cream on from the neck down and sleep overnight with that on, shower in the morning. Now you've got to take all your bed linens, any clothes you've been wearing, and wash them in hot water. For the couch cushions, for the shoes, things that you can't wash, you put in a bag, like a green, you know, garbage bag, and stick in the garage for 2 days. The mite can't live off of a human host for more than 24 hours. So you get to do all that cleaning and wash and all those things. And then you're going to repeat it 7 days later, because the mites lay their eggs underneath your skin, and in 7 days they will have hatched. The creams do not affect the eggs. So in the first treatment, you will have killed the live mites, and then the second treatment, you'll get whatever hatched. But you're doing the same thing all over, doing all that laundry, doing all that bagging of everything. So it's a lot of work, and that itch is so severe that it can sometimes, even after you're treated, take 6 to 8 weeks to get that itch to calm down.
Oh, my goodness. So you mentioned hospitals, though. I mean, they're washing linens in hospitals. Why would you get it in a hospital?
Well, somebody comes in, you know, from homeless shelter, and they're bringing it in, and you have nurses reaching over their beds and, you know, touching the patient, and it just can get spread.
In follow-up to that, so after you get rid of them and have to do all this cleaning, someone asked me, could it be carried by your pet? So in other words, could you have gotten it from your dog or cat?
Different, the dog mites and things don't live on the human host. They'll bite you, but then they're gone. So it's not the same, no.
Okay.
And bird mites, we see a lot. From nests, you can get bites, and then it's just gone.
Okay. Let's move along to something a little more pleasant. And let's get into cosmetic, because the next question that I has is there anything to do with the dark circles you get under your eyes? And I think this, I think that's a question. It's a good entree into cosmetic dermatology. So can we talk a little bit about that in general and address the question?
Okay. So there's a couple ways and a couple of things going on that are going to give you dark circles under your eyes. One of those is genetics. If you look at everybody in my family, we've got it. So there is some genetics to that. And as you might have noticed, your skin does get darker around your eyes as you go from your cheek up to your lower eyelid. That skin darkens somewhat. And nasal congestion is also going to add some darkening there. The other thing that's happening is with aging, what happens? We lose that volume in our face. We lose our fat, and that falls down. And so with the hollowing out with age, that fat pad is moving down, you get more of a hollowed look, and the reflection of light is greater, so it looks darker. So the things that we can do, what are we going to do for that? You know, for some of us, we're never going to go without cover up, and that's an easy one, but, and that's just covering the pigmentation change there. But if we want to really address it, we can add some volume and rebuild that malar fat pad and, and really bring up the skin so the reflection of light is not as great. And that is with fillers. And those are things we've had for 25 years. They're 95% of them are made out of hyaluronic acid, which is something that's in us. It's in our ground substance. And the good thing about those is if you didn't like it, we can dissolve it. But they're lasting about a year to 2 years.
So you would get it redone every year or so over time.
Mm-hmm.
What about facials and facial masks? I had a question about those. Are those healthy?
Sure. You know, I think even those of us that, you know, try to take good care of our skin, we're washing with gentle cleansers. We have a daily sunscreen. We're trying to put lotion on, keep our skin barrier intact and healthy. Even, you know, all of us that do that, I still need a facial, especially at the end of the summer, because you feel like you're just holding on to too much dead skin. All that sunscreen is sometimes hard to get off, and you just feel that layer of extra dead skin. The facial is wonderful in terms of getting that exfoliation. You know, nowadays we can add some hydration with the facial, and we could use some red light or blue light also that can decrease some inflammation. So those are helpful, definitely. And maintaining healthy skin, and I think a useful adjunct. But you don't have to do them every 2 weeks for the rest of your life, no. But just probably, I probably do it every 2 months.
Are some better than others in terms of the types of facials?
Well, I think most people that do facials will have kind of an array of what they can do, because you might do something a little bit different for acne-prone skin. For somebody that turns red and gets irritated easily, we're definitely going to be very cautious so we don't make you more red. And then somebody that just wants anti-aging. So there's a couple of different directions you can go and fine-tune it. So, yeah, it is helpful to have these different services and the ability to tailor it.
I'm going to change gears a little bit. And you mentioned acne before. And have we made a lot of progress in the treatment of acne? I remember, years ago, Accutane was like the big breakthrough in the treatment of acne. Before that, it was just soaps and lights and things such as that. So have we made a lot of progress?
I think we have. I'll be honest with you. Accutane is still something that we reserve for people who are treatment resistant and have scarring or cystic acne. We still use it a lot, and there are some people, even with our new treatments, that only respond to Accutane. So it's still a really useful tool, but it's not for everybody. But it is super safe. The way we've used it over the last 80 years has changed, but we can do so really safely. What has changed dramatically with the treatment of acne is we're really cognizant of your normal microbiome, and that is not only your bacteria that's in your gut and your bowels, but also the microbiome that is on your skin. So we try to be very cautious with antibiotic use. So it used to be the gold standard that everybody would get on antibiotics. Now, sure, especially for women, we can do it hormonally. We do have some products that have pre and probiotic topicals that we can use to encourage the normal bacteria. There's some good things out there. You know, there's talk of vaccines for acne in the future. That's kind of exciting. There is a couple lasers that are meant to give long-term remission to acne. I've looked at them the last 2 years. They're still not great. No, that's not there yet. But they're trying. So it's an exciting time. Yeah, we can help everybody.
How would a vaccine work for acne? Would it be personalized medicine? So in other words, it would be a vaccine designed for your acne? How would that work?
You know, I just heard snippets of it at the last meeting, so I don't even know how that's just in the development. They're not even testing it on people yet. So I'm not sure of that. I can't speak to that.
Well, only because it brings me into the next topic, and that is the treatment of skin cancer. I mean, with the treatment of melanoma, we've certainly had progress with the use of vaccines. Can you talk a little bit about melanoma and the treatment?
Well, you know, in our office, probably 96% of the ones we diagnose, the melanomas we do, are stage zero or stage one. So it is not common for me to actually have to refer out and have them go on and have metastatic disease. But those patients that do, it's really incredible, the immunotherapy. And I have one patient who 12 years ago was full of metastatic lesions in her legs and her lungs, even in her brain. She did CyberKnife in the, for the brain mets and immunotherapy, and she's been off of it for 10 years and still cancer-free. So it's just amazing.
Wow. I mean, so you're saying 10 years of metastatic melanoma and still living. Is pretty
amazing. Yeah, she was really at the beginning of the forefront of that. She really got the latest, greatest. So incredible, really. But our treatments are great so that, you know, it used to be a death sentence when you had a deep melanoma. Now, of course, it is not. And there's a lot more treatments, and the treatments are more tolerable. Gosh, we used, you know, the patients that were going through therapies, boy, it wasn't fun. But now it's a lot easier on them as well.
Who's more susceptible to melanoma? Is it depend on your skin pigmentation to some degree, age, sex? Who are the people who get more likely to get melanoma?
Absolutely. Those with fair skin. Melanoma is the only skin cancer that can have genetics. So 80% of the time, it happens because you've had too much sun, and specifically bad burns, which would make you accumulate your damage much faster. But 20% of the time, it can have a genetic component. So it used to be just that one gene that we knew about on chromosome 9 that ran with pancreatic cancer, and it was a very dominant gene, so you'd see the melanomas in every generation. And nowadays, you know, I have patients coming in to me, there's all these genetic tests done with breast cancer, and there are some that say increased risk of skin cancer, increased risk of melanoma. We're not 100% sure how strong those links are, but there could be some more genetic components than we know of, and that's currently being studied. But really, it's your cumulative exposure, and I guess what's the hardest thing for me these days is the sun is stronger and stronger, so it's hard to not accumulate more damage. When we lose our ozone, we're getting more and more harmful rays hitting us, and they're stronger. So you're accumulating that damage, and your skin remembers everything. And you know, as teenagers, most people did some, you know, silly stuff and got some bad burns. So it's going to be the people who had the most cumulative sun exposure, worse with burns, and the fair-skinned, it's going to increase with age, mostly because that's your cumulative sun exposure. And it's more likely on sun-exposed areas, but as you know, we can get a melanoma on the bottom of your foot where the sun don't shine. So we don't quite understand how that is, but that's why we do a full body check.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because I remember, I mean, growing up, it was rare you saw somebody with suntan or lotion or with any of these SPF blockers. And now, boy, you better put it on before you go out. And since we're on that topic, what are the safest ones? I mean, what are the do's and don'ts when you're choosing a suntan blocker, a lotion?
Great question. What I recommend all day long is the mineral or physical sunscreens. And those are the ones that have as the active ingredient zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. So those are going to not let you absorb any ultraviolet light. It bounces off. That UV rays bounce right off you if you've got titanium and zinc on. The chemical sunscreens, of which there are over 20 names, And those will let you absorb ultraviolet light, and so you're still getting some damage. So always, I'm going to say, use zinc and titanium. Those can be cosmetically not as nice because they're a little thicker, so usually you want one with a beige tint if it's going to be on your face, but those are the safest. You're not going to react to those. There's no preservatives in them. It doesn't need that. The chemical sunscreens are interesting in that there's studies that show after 4 days of use, if you're covering your body with chemical sunscreen, you have a blood level of some of these chemicals, and we're not 100% sure that's safe and what is the safe level. So I prefer you not to do that. We don't know the long term on chemical sunscreens.
What are the name brands that go with this? So, for example, zinc oxide, what would be typical of that? If I go to CVS or Walgreens, how do I know what's a zinc oxide versus one of the chemical ones?
Probably the easiest way to get a zinc and titanium one is to look for a baby sunscreen. That's what all the baby sunscreens, because babies and children up to age two are very permeable. You can get blood levels of a lot of things through kids' skin. So we're very cautious with that. But it is really hard to give you one name and know that that's going to be all the best sunscreens. Because if you say Neutrogena, that's the most common, or Coppertone, they all have some with zinc and titanium, and then a mixture, and then some that are just chemical. So even that's, you know, I love the product line CeraVe, and CeraVe AM cream with sunscreen SPF 30 is a chemical sunscreen. No, I don't like that. So you really do have to look at the back of the bottle under active ingredient, which is usually the top part of the box on the bottle, and see zinc and titanium there. That's what you want. Some of the ones that tend to do more of the zinc and titanium are a product or a company called Blue Lizard, and that's out of Australia. They are great. And Elta MD, E-L-T-A MD is a company. But again, they have a couple of them that have a little bit of chemical in there as well. So it can be tough.
Does the SPF matter?
It does matter. You know, they're still allowing companies to test SPF with white on the surface. So the FDA hasn't done us any favors in that regard. So when you put on your sunscreen SPF 40, you're getting, if you rub it in, you're getting a half to a third of that number, because they test it with white on the surface, not rubbed in. You and I aren't going to walk around with white on the surface and get it all over my clothes and my car. That's not realistic. So I do want you to go high. I think anything less than an SPF 30 is a waste of money.
Sure, sure. And I think, actually, I think it's been banned in a lot of pharmacies won't sell the lower SPF numbered things. Boy, there's so many topics here I'm still looking at. But I did want to just get your opinion. So what about, here's a quick one. Spray versus application. Are these spray ones just as good as the ones you rub on for lotion?
I'll be honest. We have some sprays in my house right now. I don't love sprays. They're all chemical. So they are going to, you know, they're going to stay on the surface as long as you're not sweating and in the water. So the minute you jump in the water, they are on the surface of the water. They're gone. So I really prefer you do a lotion head to toe before you go out. I understand if you're sweating, if you're at the beach, if you're sandy, you're not going to want to rub in sand and sweat and dirt, right? So the sprays can be used kind of for reapplication. I get that, but you still want to rub a little bit. I have seen people when I was on the beach just almost make a cloud of this spray sunscreen and walk through it. No, that's not going to do it.
Jen, I want to thank you for coming on today. There's so many topics in dermatology, and I'm just glad you're able to spend time with us today. For people who need to reach Dr. Pinoyer's office to make an appointment and for an all-important skin check, 860-243-3020. Thanks again, Jen, for everything you do for our patients and your availability today.
Thank you, Tony. I'll be here anytime.
Thank you. So that wraps up our show for today. Many thanks to our studio producer. Kevin Kors has been on the board. Jeff Chandler's in charge of sales and marketing for Healthy Rounds. Next week, I'm planning an exciting show. Something I've been looking forward to is I'm going to have a guest on who is a forensic pathologist. So all of you love those murder shows and 2020. A good friend of mine's daughter is a forensic pathologist. Her name is Dr. Rachel Geller, and she is a forensic pathologist with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. So we're going to be talking about cases, things that she finds, and I will be taking questions in advance of the visit. So if you want to reach me at info@alessimd.com. If you missed any part of today's show, you can get it at odyssey.com on our Healthy Rounds podcast. Up next on WTIC is going to be Law Talk with attorney John Matulis. Until next week, this is Dr. Anthony Alessi. Please stay healthy.
This has been Healthy Rounds with Dr. Anthony Alessi. Sponsored by St. Francis Hospital, Rochford Eye Center, Hartford Healthcare, MD Advantage, and UConn Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Be sure to tune in next Saturday morning at 11 for more Healthy Rounds on WTIC News Talk 1080 and WTIC.com.